DW.
Professor Hans-Joachim Schellnhuber is a physicist and founding director of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. Not only has he just helped design a carbon roadmap for how our society can wean itself off fossil fuels, he's also calculated what our chances are of actually achieving this very ambitious goal. Professor Schellnhuber sat down with me at DW while he was in Bonn this week, and I began by asking him where the world is at with its carbon budget.
We spent 500 billion tons of pure carbon. So that's a huge amount, of course. So that means we have more or less spent 1800 billion tons of CO2 already since the inception of the Industrial Revolution. If we want to hold the 1.5 degrees line, which is the ambitious goal of the Paris Agreement, we have left maybe 300 billion tons, which means more or less the budget of 10 years if we do business as usual. If we want to hold the 2 degrees line, which is more realistic, we have another 20, 30 years to go, but not more actually. So it's a very tight budget.
And in order to meet the tight budget that you mentioned, what do you see as being the major things that need to happen between now and then?
Actually, there will be a paper appearing in magazine Science, so one of the top magazines where I'm a co-author next week, which is designing a, what we call a carbon roadmap. So it means precisely how to stay within the carbon budget, what has to happen in industry, in domestic energy use, in agriculture, land use, and so on. And it's quite mind-boggling, actually. We do sort of decadal steps. And for example, by 2030, we have to phase out the combustion engine, and we have to phase out completely the use of coal for producing power. By 2040, we probably have to replace concrete and steel for construction by wood, clay, stone, so the old materials again, and so on. So you can come up with a complete narrative, more or less, how we can reach the Paris goal. But by the way, this is not the only possible narrative. There are several ones, but all have in common, they are completely transformative.
So we do have an international climate agreement signed and ratified. Are we on track to meet our emissions reductions targets, do you think?
I mean, here Germany actually has the more ambitious goal here within the European Union, the 40% reduction by 2020. It looks fairly bleak, actually. With the current policies in place, we will not even meet our own target, the 40% reduction. Something fairly disruptive needs to happen, like closing down some of the operating coal-fired power stations. European Union is under-ambitious, clearly, would have actually to raise the ambition immediately after Paris, what did not happen actually, so it's a very sluggish process. Globally, there are some good news actually. China probably even has peaked emissions already now, which is amazing really. India has an extremely ambitious solar energy program now, investing a lot. So the only black horse in the race is the US.
Which leads me to my next question. The US President Donald Trump has threatened to pull out of the Paris Accord. How big an impact would this have on the international climate action that we've achieved so far?
Yeah, that's the $1 billion question, of course. And I mean, first of all, it's not clear whether Trump will pull the US out of the Paris Agreement. I don't think he will. I think, like other laggards and sort of obstructors in the past, like Saudi Arabia, the US will just stay on board and try to slow down all the processes. So you have a much bigger procrastination power if you're in than if you're out, actually. So that's my expectation. What effect will it have? I would say 10 years ago, this would have been a complete disaster for climate policy. Now with China, biggest emitter, and actually now the biggest investor into renewables, with the Asian economies now slowly changing, I think the world could achieve climate protection even without the US.
Scott Pruitt, who now heads the US Environmental Protection Agency, recently denied carbon dioxide as a major contributor to global warming.
Measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact. So no, I would not agree that it's a primary contributor to the global warming that we see. Or we don't know that yet.
His comments go against the 97% consensus of the world's scientists. Now, scientists generally tend to stay out of politics, but do you think, given the current political climate there, that scientists will become more politicized and outspoken?
I have the big privilege to work in a former office where Albert Einstein was doing his job. And you know, he's one of the greatest geniuses and physicists of all time. And he was a very political animal, actually. That did not impact in any way on the quality of his equations. So you can actually do both. I think now this blatant denial, actually, of the scientific system as such, it's not just climate science, it's the laws of physics, more or less, are put in doubt. And laws of physics are not passed by a parliament, by the way. I have to insist on that. I think if the very system of the scientific method and the scientific research is in doubt, then scientists have to take to the street in the end and have to demonstrate that, hey, we are doing a job for you, actually. We scientists who love to sit in our ivory towers and untainted by the dirt of the real world and so on, we have to take to the street, we have to speak up, we have to leave our ivory towers, and we have to communicate to everybody that we want to be part of the solution.
World leaders will gather here in Bonn in November for the next round of climate negotiations. Is the political will on climate action still there, do you think? And how important are these talks?
Yeah, I have participated in, I think, 15 or 18 of these COPs. These talks are extremely frustrating, and every time you think this is the last one and you will never attend again, but there is now a show in town, you have to do it. In the end, I think what we saw in Paris was an amazing achievement that each and every nation more or less said, yes, 2 degrees, climate action. Now, the other thing is, of course, how realistic is an agreement which is multilateral, unanimous even, like in Paris. And here I think it's the task of the science to tell stakeholders, ministers, chancellors, presidents, that the job to be done is extremely daunting, is actually unparalleled. It is more or less, it is doing an industrial revolution, at least of the scale of the original industrial revolution, where fossil fuels were sort of taken on board for creating the modern society. But this time we do not have 200 years for achieving and doing the job. We have only 30 years. And this is unprecedented, absolutely. So in a way, we are at the crossroads now. We either say this thing is too big for us, this task cannot be done, when we will be transformed by nature, because we will end up with a planet warming by 4, 5, 6, or even 12 degrees, it would be the end of the world as we know it. And here I have all the evidence. Or we say we are doing the transformation ourselves. And if we do it right, it will be the next big project of modernity, and it will give our life a new meaning. So, go for it.
You're very positive. That's good. So many, many cities and countries are showing a strong commitment for climate action, as you say. And there's also a growing global momentum at the grassroots level. How do you see the role of civil society moving forward on climate action?
Actually, if you would have asked me 10 years or even 5 years ago, I would have said this is just a sort of a nice add-on and fairly unpolitical in the end. Over the last years, I've come to the personal conclusion, I may be wrong, but I feel that the bottom-up, the grassroots action is actually the most important at all. I'm a huge supporter of the so-called divestment movement. That means, yes, in the end, it's economically efficient to switch to renewables. Yes, polluter has to pay, you have to pay for the carbon emissions. Yes, we have to get rid of air pollution and so on. This will come around if we have a century time left, but we don't. So what I think is that each and every person takes a moral stance, actually, and says, I don't want to be part of the destruction of the world. I want to be part of the preservation.
So how optimistic are you that the global economy can decarbonize before we reach the threshold of global warming?
When I calculated, semi-tongue-in-cheek, but it's not complete nonsense, try to calculate what is the chance that we will decarbonize fast enough in order to hold the 2 degrees line, for example. And my result is, chance is 19%, 19. So when you tell this to a general public, they say, oh my God, only 19%, that's a very slim chance. And I said, come on, it could be 0 or 1 or 2. If everything is at stake, and I really feel human civilization as such is at stake, when 19% is a brilliant chance. So you see, I'm a sort of a desperate optimist. it's not a brilliant chance in reality, but it's the only choice we have.
DW,